Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hello, everybody. It is that time of the week again. Welcome to Anime Initiative, the anime and manga-centric segment of Comic Book Nation. Of course, you've heard me before. I'm Megan Peters, your host, along with my two friends and co-workers, Evan Valentine and Nick Valdez.
Hey. Hey, everybody.
Howdy, everybody.
Hello, hello. Well, you know what? Another week, and guess what? More anime's happened. Anime happens when you're expecting it, you know? You know, every time we end a podcast, I'm like, man, I hope more news comes through. And you know what? The anime industry delivered for us. I love that. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. So today, we have a bunch of news, kind of just like a big kind of news breakdown. You know, the biggest things that have happened since we last spoke. We got a Fairy Tail update. I know, shocking. It's been a while. We have a Netflix One Piece update. Shocker beyond all shocks, Macross, the lovely old school mech anime, has found a streaming home. And again, of course, we're going to be touching on Dragon Ball Super. And then after our ad break, we're going to go deep. We're going to dive deep, peel back the layers of the anime industry. And we're going to talk about isekai. We're going to look at Suicide Squad Isekai, the new anime that's going to be coming out this summer that blends the best of anime with DC Comics. And then we're just going to talk about why in the world isekai is everywhere you look in the anime industry. So, buckle in. Are you guys ready?
Yeah,
super ready.
Well, let's just kind of start at the top of our rundown, because the first thing I want to talk about is Fairy Tail. And that should come as no surprise. Ask anybody who knows me. I was obsessed with Fairy Tail growing up. And no, we're not talking about traditional, you know, Rumpelstiltskin's kind of fairy tales. We're talking about the anime. We're talking about Natsu Dragneel. We're talking about Lucy Heartfelia. We're talking about Hiro Mashima's Fairy Tail. So for those of you that don't know, the series ended a long time ago, and it spawned off with a sequel, Fairy Tail 100 Years Quest. Well, it's getting an anime, and we got our first trailer, which, you know, as I say trailer loosely, right? It's really just kind of like a slideshow. But essentially, we learned that Fairy Tail is going to be returning to air in July. How are we feeling?
It sure is, you know.
All right, so Nick is way less enthusiastic than I am.
No, I mean, it's like, as someone who was here, like covering that, helping Megan cover that final season when it hit, you know, I personally closed my book on Fairy Tail. And then Megan was like, hey, did you know there's a sequel? And I'm like, excuse me?
So, you went, what?
Yeah. well, you know, the end of the first series ends with Natsu and the others deciding to take on the titular 100 years quest, you know, that the S-class ranking mission that no one has ever passed before. And now the sequel is actually showing what that mission looks like, which is something I didn't need. So I will say that straight out. I loved Fairy Tail when it was. And when it ended, it was sort of one of those go off into the distance kind of endings for me, where I'm, you know, one of those, mm-hmm. the adventures will continue, but we don't need to see them kind of endings. And now that we're here with the sequel that was announced like 3-4 years ago, and now the anime's finally coming, of course I'll be seated. We'll be there. There's some big developments in the sequel that fans wanted to see in the original. So, you know, I can't wait to actually talk about those and react mm-hmm. to those when they happen. But outside of that, I'm just like, yeah.
What do you think, Evan?
I'm not as familiar with Fairy Tail in general.
Oh, well, you're about to get real familiar.
I'm going to be made very familiar.
I have Fairy Tail flashcards. I'm going to ask you like when Zaref's birthday was.
That's one of our secrets here at Team Anime on comicbook.com. We have flashcards that we review when it comes to all these series.
Evan, Evan, you got to catch up on a decade of anime. I'm sorry, Evan. That's just
let me throw that on the list. I did want to comment. I thought this was very funny because when I was kind of familiarizing myself before we started recording today, I was like, man, who's the studio who's covering Fairy Tail 100-year quest? And it's a returning studio that we talked about here on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. A good old JC staff is covering this one. They will be returning as well with One Punch Man season 3 whenever that comes out. So we will see. I think you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Cloverworks had worked on the last episodes of Fairy Tail's original series, right?
Yeah, they were involved in the final season.
There were some pretty big battle sequences, you know, for that final season. They wanted to flex a little bit. But yeah, so for 100 Years Quest, basically, you know, for people who are familiar with the original Fairy Tail series, because like, I don't know, when I first started watching Fairy Tail, I mean, years and years and years ago, I was like, man, this is a little anime and no one's ever heard of it, because I had never like seen a lot of conversation online, only to then find out, you know, it was this massive series mm-hmm. that Hiro Mashima, the creator of Rave Master, had kind of moved into. And for people who don't know Fairy Tail, you might know Hiro Mashima because he is the creator of Eden Zero, which is, you know, a very popular manga and an anime that you can find on Netflix. So he's one of the hardest working artists in manga. He finishes a series, I don't even know, like goes like drink a glass of water and then immediately starts another series.
And Megan, not even that too. Like sometimes he starts one while he's ending another one. Like Eden Zero is in its final arc, and like he already started a new one that's already like a hundred, like 10 chapters in or something like that. It's wild. Like the dude just, I guess, just doesn't sleep or eat or drink.
I don't know. He's just on it, because I will say this. So for Fairy Tail 100 Years Quest, Hiro Mashima is in charge of the story and the storyboards, but Atsuo Ueda is the artist that does the manga. And I mean, the manga has been going on for, I mean, years at this point, like 5 years or something like that. I mean, it has a lot of content to adapt. So for people who aren't familiar, basically this story, this sequel of Fairy Tail, takes place in a different continent area that we're used to. And it's following Natsu, Lucy, and the gang as they are essentially going to this new continent. And they basically have to take on this super difficult S-class event where they have to steal 5 like dragon gods, essentially. And in the manga, it's pretty sweet. There are definitely some very, I'll say, surprising and overdue reveals in the sequel that, you know, we all wanted from the main series. So we will be excited to talk about that. But yeah, Fairy Tail's happening. It's getting a sequel. Y'all didn't know, you know, we're back. We're back, it baby. Sure, that's what I want to
sure
see.
It sure is.
For better or for worse, it's back. So yeah, so talking about things that are coming back. we can't go long on this podcast without talking about Demon Slayer. I mean, we're an anime podcast. What are we supposed to do? So if you didn't realize, in the last 7 days, we got a brand new trailer for season 4 for Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba. Of course, we've talked about this on the show. This new season will be adapting, you know, oh my gosh, I forgot the name. What's the name of the arc? The
Hashira training arc. Yes.
Okay, that's why. Here's the reason why I forgot the name of the arc. It's because it's kind of boring.
Yeah, and it's also like 9 chapters in the original. Yeah. And just jumping in here real quick, you know, the Swordsmith Village movie came out, and to the Hashira training, and is the first episode of season 4. And in that first episode, it's like adapting 2 chapters plus a little bit of a third one that happens much later for like better flow. So that's already 2 out of like the arc. So I am curious as to how long this new one is. And especially because the release date's not till May 12th, which means it's likely going to be a shorter episode order. Like, what do we think? Like, maybe like 8 episodes? Maybe?
I mean, here's the thing. If they go more than 10, they're going to have to include a filler episode. Like, a completely original filler. Which, again, you know, in anime, filler gets such a bad rap. I think, depending on, you know, how faithful the filler is to the, you know, the original series, and whether or not the creator has any say in it, you know, it can work. It has to be short. The Hashira training, or unless they start dipping into, you know, more stuff about, you know, the Infinity Castle and kind of leading into the final arc, like, or the final act rather. I don't know. It has to be short because it comes out May 12th. That's when season 4 debuts. I don't know. The pacing has got me concerned.
Yeah, because just as a bit of an explainer, the spring 2024 season officially kicks off in April. That's when we get all the new anime stuff. And usually that means either 12 or 13 episode runs for these seasons. So when we say all that, and we say it's starting in May, we're already looking at a truncated order. So, you know, and that means, if Megan's right and they include a filler, which they kind of already do in the premiere, there's already a ton of it. There's a little bit of extra material. So we'll see. But then again, now is the time, because after this, it's, you know, the final fights and people start dying, and, you know, this is the time to learn about their characters.
I will say this, though. So, I mean, we've discussed this previously. If you've read Demon Slayer, you know, the manga, I think you will more than likely agree with my sentiment that even the pacing of the manga is wonky around this point. The manga just hits like light speed, man. It just starts going. Yeah. And I know as I was reading it, as Demon Slayer was coming out, I kept thinking, you know, for the creator, Kuyoharu Gotoshi, I've just butchered that name. I'm so sorry. I haven't had coffee. You know, I really wanted them to slow down. I wanted them to take a breath and like expand more content with the individual Hashira. You know, I am number one Giyu Tomika stan. So like, give me more of the water Hashira, give me more of Inosuke doing training and like crazy stunts. You know, there's a bunch of stuff that I felt there was breathing room for in the manga that was never allowed. So if the anime wants to kind of give those points of breathing, I would be absolutely okay with that in terms of filler content. I know that might be a controversial opinion given how filler is viewed in the anime sphere. But man, the manga was just going so fast, and it didn't need to be going that fast that soon, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then it slows down at the worst possible time too. Like, I won't get into any spoilers here. But yeah, it starts slowing down in the final battle, and the final battle goes real Frieza, and you know, Namek blows up in 5 minutes, which is like
Frieza situation Dragon Ball.
So heads up, you know, get ready for that.
Like, UFO Table, the studio behind Demon Slayer, really has the opportunity to enhance the Hashira training arc, because when I knew the manga was going to be adapting that, I was like, man, this is going to be sick. It's going to be like 20 something chapters. We're going to get some really great character development and growth for not just the Hashira, but for, you know, we got a lot of Tanjiro during the Swordsmith Village arc. I wanted more from Inosuke, and I wanted more from Zenitsu. We just didn't get it. So I'm hoping, you know, give, we already know we're having a truncated episode order just because season four release is on May 12th. But I hope maybe they take a little bit of time and give us some extras. And also, just on a personal note, I want so much of Tengen. Just give me all the sound Hashira and his bejeweled eye patch. So sick.
I think that like, first off, when it comes to like the swordsmith the swordsmith village arc that came before, I think the fact that this is bringing back Inosuke immediately puts it on a higher level. Even just because I'm such a big Inosuke guy. I love Inosuke. I love Zenitsu.
There was an entire season without them, Evan.
It's crazy. That was a detriment of the Swordsmith Village. I think that, like, another thing that just kind of, when looking at the Swordsmith Village, I mean, it was a fact, and it kind of goes back to what Megan was saying, which is effectively like, you need to give it a bit more time to breathe. I think the first season kind of did that perfectly in terms of setting up Tanjiro, his training, meeting the rest of the cast, spreading that out over a set, you know, number of episodes, and kind of working from there. And to an extent, you know, Mugen Train and I think Entertainment District Arc, they both did that really well. And then, you know, Swordsmith Village was essentially just like a giant fight scene that was like, here's the Mist Hashira, here's the Love Hashira. They're going to like immediately come in. And I think his name is Genya, the dude with the gun. Yeah, the guy with the gun. Amazing design, amazing character. I wish that he had more time to kind of dive into his background. I know that we did get like one episode that kind of flashed back and showed his relationship to another, to a member of the Hashira that turns out to be his brother, all that stuff. So the Hashira training, like, as Megan said, filler isn't necessarily a bad word. It just depends on whether or not it's done right. And I think that they could pull a rabbit out of their hat and maybe add some material here that would help kind of expand on this. And
I think I can sum it up by saying, give us One Piece filler and don't give us Bleach filler.
Don't give us Naruto filler.
I mean, that's a whole other conversation. That is a whole other conversation.
Yeah. We'll have an episode dedicated to filler shortly. Cool. But that's where we are with Demon Slayer season four.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, speaking of another season that we're looking forward to, not of an anime, but of a live action adaptation. Obviously, the world fell in love with Netflix's One Piece adaptation last year. Season 2 has already been ordered. It was very quickly ordered, just given the insane amount of success that, you know, season one had. Of course, everyone is wanting to know when in the world season two is happening. When is it going to go live? Well, we still don't know that. However, we do know that progress is now finally being made in terms of production on season two. The main key point is that there are a lot of One Piece fans in Cape Town, and that is where One Piece is filmed by Netflix. And some set photos have surfaced online as of late that show the Going Merry is back on set. They sailed that puppy from wherever they were, and they brought the Going Merry back to the Cape Town studios where Netflix films One Piece. So
cool.
There's also not just one Going Merry. There's two of them. So, you know what, you know, the only thing better than, you know, one of them is two of them. So we do know that production on season two is imminent, which we love to see because, man, the live action adaptation, I'm so interested to see how season two is going to be done because it's so big. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like the Alabasta Saga, which is the next one up, has like tons of little mini arcs within it. And they're, you know, speaking of content you could skip and kind of move around and stuff, the first season was kind of good at doing that in like picking and choosing what the best elements were. And there are some moments in the Alabasta Saga that we can just straight up pluck right out, you know, we can yeah, pluck out some uncharacteristic stuff for Luffy and Zoro in the I forget what the village is called, but it's that, you know, it's where we meet the Baroque Works for the first time. Spoilers. But that town, that little town arc, we can kind of pluck that right out and throw Baroque Works and something else and then kick off the Alabasta Saga from there. But I am also curious, but where I'm sitting, they can take as long as they want with it if it means we get as good of a season as season one. So I'm willing to wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting point to think about what, cause there is this, especially Alabasta. And like, I think if this season was only focused on Alabasta, it would be a tough enough job to kind of take all the smaller sub arcs and kind of decide what you're going to do. But the fact that this will most likely also, you know, the first episode will probably be Logue Town. And then they'll have to go to Drum Island where they pick up Tony Chopper. And then they have to go to Alabasta because there are parts of Alabasta that I think, while not necessarily key to the overall story, I think they go a long way in terms of bolstering the characters of the Straw Hats. Like when Luffy and company, when they go to that tiny village in Alabasta where those ragtag mercs are like running it and asking for money and everything, as well as when they run into that that sniper father who's trying to make a name for himself by kind of taking one of them out. So there's a lot of stuff that I'm not envious of whoever has to make the decision. I'm interested to see how Oda will kind of balance everything out working with the showrunners. And after the first season, I'm confident. I think they got the right balance for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it won't be like an 8-year wait that it was for the first season, right? Because they've already like the problem with like what took the first season so long was actually doing it. And now that they've done it already, I feel like at least the process is smoother. And hopefully there won't be any, you know, worldwide pandemics going on that will halt this one.
Or strike. Knock on wood right now. I need you to cancel that out.
Yeah, I mean, double pandemics, right? So, you know, like, that's what I'm assuming, that this one won't take the 8 years. It'll take maybe 3-4. Maybe 5 would be pushing it. I will say that straight up. If we get the next season of Avatar before we get the next season of One Piece, I'm over it. But, you know, like, take its time, but also don't take too much time. I don't know. I'm very.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm gonna differ with you. I mean, I think it'll come out within the next 1 to 2 years. I think.
Okay.
I think they're gonna try to push it further. I mean, again, we have no understanding or information on what the season two episode order might look like, what kind of budget it's dealing with in the wake of season one. But you know, when you're looking at something with Alabasta, when you know you have major characters that are coming into the story, you know, looking at Ace, looking at Tony, looking at you know, Dr. Kureha, which I'm sure they're going to have to dedicate a large budget to Jamie Lee Curtis because she better be in One Piece season two. You know, she's begging for it at this point. That there's just so much to do, so much to see. So it's definitely, you know, as, you know, I guess nerve-wracking it is to see how they're going to handle, you know, Alabasta. I definitely have the confidence in them. And now that we know that the set for season two, the ships are coming back in, you know, actors Makinu, who plays Zoro, and Tess Schuyler, who plays Sanji, and the live action adaptation at various conventions, they've hinted that they will be back in South Africa filming in the latter half of this year. So, I mean, nice. If filming is going to get started by this summer, you know, I would be really surprised if we didn't have the show out by next year. But again, we'll see. We don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but I'm very excited, and we will see how it goes. But there's maybe one thing that I'm more excited about than One Piece, and that is maybe an anime you've not heard of, but Macross, the good old retro, really good mecha sci-fi anime, has finally found a streaming home in one cohesive place. For the most part, there is a caveat: two series will not be available, or it will, a series and a movie will not be available. But Macross is going to be streaming on Disney Plus, which is wild to me.
Wow, Disney. Wow, they're really, I mean, first it was the Kadokawa deal, now it's Macross. Now it's like, ooh, they are really putting their wallets behind anime.
I know. Have either of you seen Macross, or are either of you familiar with the franchise?
I'm familiar with it, and I've seen an episode or two in passing. I think that it's so awesome to see that stuff like this is happening, because it does, aside from just places like Netflix or Disney Plus, you know, making their own original anime content, seeing them kind of recognize what came before and bringing it back to a whole new audience. I think that for folks who are watching this live, you can see like the animation still holds up. It's like, yeah, it's maybe it's not like as clean as the modern day stuff, but like, you know, it gets the job done, and the stories kind of resonate for decades following when they initially arrived. So like, I'm super excited. I'm gonna dive into this when it comes to Disney Plus, and I'm excited to see. I'm a fan of going back and kind of revisiting some of these older series.
Yeah, because Macross has been caught in this kind of licensing hiffle, and like because of that, like it's, you know, it's been very hard to watch, you know, with distributors in English and multiple other languages and stuff like that. So getting it all in one place is huge. And Macross 2, it's not only like, it's a wild franchise in that it's not only like a big mech series, big science fiction series. It also kind of like influenced idol anime. Like, it's kind of like why we have shows about idols. Like, we have the Idol Love Life Superstar and stuff like that. As you can see in the clip, as we're showing here on the stream, like there are prominent characters who like sing and dance and kind of are idolized, and that kind of sparked that whole genre too. So it's really wild to actually get the history all in one place. This is huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge deal. You know, if you want to read more about the kind of licensing debacle that has kept Macross away from streaming and really any kind of cohesive distribution plan outside of Japan, you know, we have plenty of coverage of that on comicbook.com. But it is worth noting that, you know, unfortunately, Super Dimensional Fortress Macross will not be included in this. It will only be streaming in Japan on Disney Plus. And that is the kind of Macross that most people know. That one is still caught in a licensing debacle. And then the movie Macross, Do You Remember Love, is also going to be exclusively showing in Disney Plus Japan. But the rest of the titles will be available on Disney Plus, which in and of itself is a massive win for a series like this. It just really is so good, because, I mean, we talk about the necessity of physical media. We talk about the necessity of, or, you know, or the non-necessity of, you know, streaming and digital media. Well, the problem is Macross is also just so hard to get on physical media in English, just because of the licensing debacle. You can't get it here in America, or it is absurdly expensive. So to have this kind of ease of access is definitely a great, you know, win for retro anime fans, I'll say.
Yeah,
with that said, we will move to our final topic, which of course is none other than Son Goku himself, Dragon Ball Super. We are on the cusp of a new chapter. I believe it's chapter 103, correct?
Yes.
So we are on the cusp of chapter 103, as we've discussed in a previous episode. Unfortunately, this chapter is, as far as we know, one of the final ones that series creator Akira Toriyama worked on prior to his passing. But the first drafts did go live of, you know, the chapter. Dragon Ball Super tends to release a couple pages early of the like first draft of a chapter, just to like tease what's on the way. And basically what it teased is that the superhero arc is officially ending with chapter 103. So the question obviously is now what comes next?
It's definitely like, I mean, it's great to see that. I think there's kind of always this dynamic of whether or not you should kind of dive into fan service when it comes to a lot of anime stuff. But like so many fans have been wondering, hey, who's stronger between Gohan and Goku at this moment? So like getting kind of a definitive answer on that is super cool. I mean, it's good to see that and everything. Mm-hmm. I think that like in terms of the obviously in the future, we have no idea what's going to happen. But obviously the big hanging chad of Dragon Ball at the moment is Black Frieza. Frieza's ultimate transformation after hanging out in a hyperbolic time chamber, aka Room of Spirit and Time, for the equivalent of 10 years, and being able to one-shot Goku and Vegeta in their ultimate forms. And so like he's still out there. He's been out there for a little bit. I hope that they have and after all, we could use another tournament arc. So wrapping up, you know, something with Frieza into some kind of tournament, that would be pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, because we still got to get to End of Z somehow. And I guess like we can just wrap it up here and then be like, oh, okay, well, End of Z happens, but you can't have End of Z with Frieza still out there. So that's the thing, is like we do need to resolve that. Like whether it's the next arc or whether we get a new arc that's like, oh, here's another Granola or somebody brand new that before Frieza comes back. And it's like, oh, okay. But we have to resolve that. I don't know. And someone who's like, oh, you can't give me Frieza as a god and not bring it back. Like, you just can't do that to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. I mean, you two put it perfectly. We have this massive, massive dangling, you know, smoking gun in front of us with Black Frieza. You know, we cannot resolve Dragon Ball Super at minimum until that has been addressed. So, you know, my best guess is that, you know, this superhero arc is kind of where, you know, maybe that will pay a nice kind of homage and a farewell to Toriyama. Again, we don't know how much content he and Toyotaro, the artist of Dragon Ball Super, were working on behind the scenes, unfortunately, before his passing. You know, he might have several arcs planned. There might be nothing. We really don't know at this point. It was announced this morning, though, that once Chapter 103 of Dragon Ball Super is released later this month, it will be going on a break in April. So we will have a little bit of a break, and I guess we'll kind of come back and see what happens with Dragon Ball Super next. But yeah, it looks like the superhero arc for the manga is going to finally be done. It will finish up Goku versus Gohan. So my final question I need to ask you two for this segment, who's winning that battle?
I don't think we get a winner.
You don't think? Interesting. You want it to be a tie?
No, I think it's the Dragon Ball cop-out of like, you know, it's going to be one of those happy endings where we don't really get to see who wins. And they're just going to kind of like, I don't know, be satisfied with what happens. It's the Goku Vegeta thing. Like, we didn't get a prominent Vegeta win until the superhero movie itself. So I think here we're getting that with Goku and Gohan. They're just kind of going to be like, we are both strong. And then like Beerus is going to get hungry or something and stop the fight. You know what I mean? It's one of those.
I, I am hoping that we get a Gohan win here. I just want Gohan to be the strong. Like, in my heart of hearts, I want Piccolo to be the strongest Z fighter. I was hoping that Orange Piccolo would put him at the top of the leaderboard. But yeah, I'll take Gohan. I would like Gohan to kind of beat up his father for the many years that he was not there for him.
I have to say, I growing up as a kid watching Dragon Ball Z as a child, I had the biggest crush on Gohan. So like in every way sense. I'm biased. In every way I'm biased. So I can't take an objective stance on this. I want Gohan to beat the ever loving snot out of Goku. But I think Nick, you're right. There's no way we're gonna get a definitive stance on this. They'll make like a cop out that like Gohan has the highest power level, but Goku has the better techniques. Like, it's going to be something like that.
Yeah.
Ultimately, yes. It's going to tie itself out. But those are our bets. So, you know, next time that we're having an episode, I guess we'll see who wins. See how this fight goes out. But yeah, Dragon Ball Super, new chapter comes out, you know, very shortly. It'll be on a break next month, and then we will see where the series goes from there. So now we got to pay for the show. You know, we got to make money in order to talk about anime with everybody. So we're going to take a quick ad break, and then we're going to be back to talk about all things Isekai and Suicide Squad. Welcome back to Anime Initiative, the anime focus segment of Comic Book Nation. We are back. We are here to dive into what is arguably the biggest kind of genre in anime and kind of its flagship series that's coming out in 2024. So if you did not know, the Suicide Squad is coming to anime, which is nuts in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
So Nick, do you want to break down what the show is?
Oh, yes. Awesome. So Suicide Squad Isekai, it's a brand new Suicide Squad based show where, you know, we get the group of DC Comics villains like Harley Quinn, Clayface, King Shark, Peacemaker, Deadshot, basically the ones you saw in, maybe not in the James Gunn one, but the one prior of that kind of lineup. And so they're going to be thrown into a whole new world. And that's the Isekai part of it. Isekai anime, we'll get into here in a bit. Is basically means another world. And that is sort of what we'll see with this one, is they're going to be on a mission where they're kind of, they have to do something. I don't know what the something is yet. They've been playing very coy about this. They're thrown into like a world of like dragons and monsters and kingdoms and stuff like that. And they have to solve these things by Amanda Waller or their heads get blown off. You know, standard Suicide Squad stuff.
Yeah, so Suicide Squad.
I am excited. It's being produced by Wit Studio. It has a lot of like anime juggernauts in the voice cast. So I can't wait to see how this thing turns out. And it just looks great. Like if you look at the trailer we have here in the stream, just looks good. And, you know, that's kind of like one of the first things you worry about, right, with the Suicide Squad, because we've seen animated versions of them in before with like I think it was Arkham Asylum, like Hell to Pay. I think that was set in like the Arkham universe with the DC animated one. Then there was you know, there's the Justice League Doom. Oh wait, no, not Doom. I'm getting it all mixed up here on the spot, but it looks good. This is what I'll say.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Nick, you said it perfectly. We got a brand new trailer and poster. You know, Suicide Squad Isekai was announced last summer, actually. And so it'll take about a year to come out. We know for sure that this series is coming out in July. And, you know, promotions for it are going really hard. Warner Brothers Japan is presenting this in tandem with Wit Studios. And if you aren't familiar with Wit Studios, just by us saying the company's name, you know, right now they're probably best known for, you know, my personal favorite is Spy Family. They work on Spy Family with Cloverfield, but they also, you know, they oversaw, you know, parts of Vinland Saga. They did part of the Ancient Magnus Bride. What else have they done? Ranking of Kings.
Attack on Titan.
Attack on
the
Titan.
The first three seasons, not like the fourth one.
The first two, like season one and season two and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And yeah, so... I will just say this, you know, we haven't been able to talk about Suicide Squad Isekai on this podcast yet. You know, we are a show in its infancy, but It's nuts to me that Suicide Squad is getting an isekai anime or an anime period. So before we can kind of really delve into how wild this is, we have Nick Valdez here, who is arguably the expert of comicbook.com. I'm putting him on the spot. Put him on the spot right now. Tell me and tell all of our lovely listeners, what is isekai?
Oh, okay, cool. I was like, I was hoping it wasn't going to be super hard or anything like
that.
Oh,
no, I don't have my flashcards with me. It's not
going
to be that hard.
Yeah, so isekai, once again, basically means another world. And that is the name of this subgenre in which an anime character is thrown into another world for whatever reason. There have been multiple things in the past. They've either died and been reincarnated. A lot of the times, that's where the truck... a joke comes in. A lot of times they are hit by a truck and then wake up alive in another world as like babies, animals, vending machines, pigs. Animals. And then now the Suicide Squad are doing this own thing because then there are gates that they can go through, which is the Suicide Squad version. They're just going through a portal. Sometimes they are summoned as the hero to this kingdom that's fighting a demon lord. And then, you know, whoever gets summoned finds out they have a secret power. Then there are ones that like Sword Art Online, which kind of count, but kind of don't, because it's technically they are trapped within a video game and kind of need to survive that. And it's another world from their own. And that's basically what it means. Like, it's just anything where someone is taken and put into another world, and the other world really doesn't matter. You know, it can be fantasy, it can be post-apocalyptic, it can be whatever the Suicide Squad's doing. It's just they're plucked from their world and thrown into another one. That is what isekai is.
Yeah, so, you know, like my favorite thing to point out is like technically Inuyasha is the isekai. Yeah. You know, technically Kagome goes in that well and goes to another world. You can even stretch. I know we talked about Sword Art Online, but like even things like Digimon, you know, they get taken to the digital world. Technically, if you're going down to technicalities here, Digimon is isekai, confirmed.
Yeah. Digimon, Escaflowne. We have shows coming out this spring that are isekai, like Konosuba, that time I got reincarnated as a slime. Of course, with isekai, the more we get them, the longer the titles get, which is probably the best part of it all. You know,
I know Suicide Squad isekai is a really short anime title for an isekai series, three words.
Yeah.
It's not like 30. Just like Nick said, you know, isekai is so broad. And in the last, man, really 10 years or so, I would maybe edge it up to 15, but, you know, really in the last 10 years or so, isekai has just blown up. It is probably the predominant genre or kind of, you know, story arc, like tool that you see in a narrative in anime. There are so many isekai stories out there. So, Evan, I wanted to ask you, why do you think isekai anime series are becoming so popular? I mean, why are they still absolutely dominating the charts on Netflix, on Crunchyroll?
I think there's something to be said for like the power fantasy aspect of it, which is kind of like taking what is effectively more of a mundane character, because that is kind of a uniting thread amongst many of these isekai, is that you're starting off with a character who is, maybe there's stuff like Jobless Reincarnation, for example, where it is a guy who was just living in his parents' basement and he didn't have any life, but because of a traffic accident, he wakes up reborn as a kid who has the ability to use magic better than anyone else in the world at that point. And obviously Suicide Squad isekai is a little different because these are super powered people that are being brought into a locale that's far different than the DC universe. Mm-hmm. And I would say like there's that aspect of it, but there's also the fact that the genre can be so many different things. It can be, there's one, and maybe I'm butchering the name of it, but reborn as a vending machine in another world, or somebody had just dropped,
yes,
or someone is just reborn as a vending machine. Like, that's so weird. And I haven't watched it myself, but like, I'm going to check it out at some point.
No,
just because of that concept alone.
Yeah, it's literally just that, Evan. Like, it's literally just a person in a, like, a vending machine person, you know, that they their whole power set in that show is just, like, getting a menu of things that they could vend out and help others with. And yeah, then they figure out they could turn into other kind of vending machines, like gumball machines and stuff. So it's really, I think,
for me personally, one of my favorites is Uncle from Another World, which is just right. Amazing, hilarious series that is able to kind of take all the different aspects of isekai itself and kind of play on them in a way that like parodies them and anime in general. And I think that there's like a level of creativity and freedom in that, that isekai series in general are able to kind of tap into. And they're not in a certain, you know, structure there. And isekai is kind of in the same, like, structure as like defining an action anime or defining like a romantic comedy or something like that. They're just, it's such a big thing that, you know, people can find something for themselves in that genre, and I think they do.
Yeah, totally. Like, Evan, Uncle from Another World is a great example because there have been so many isekai anime every year. Like, yeah, we're talking about Suicide Squad here, but just this spring, we're getting like 6, 7, 8 more. And that when Suicide Squad comes out, we're getting another like 10. And the thing about isekai now is that there are so many, the new ones kind of have to twist it in order to like, bring people in. And Uncle from Another World is a great example because it's an example of what happens after the isekai. It's what happens after he's the hero in this other world, comes back and finds out he has the magic. So, like, you know, it's told through flashbacks that we see, and it gets to play jokes on that. And it's the same thing with a vending machine. It's the same thing with like these other shows that kind of go for wacky premises in order to like stand out even more. And I think that's what's going to be the interesting trend. It isn't going to be, oh, here is another power fantasy. It's how can we flip the power fantasy? Of course, you'll still have those, but you'll have more shows like Konosuba of like someone coming to another world and then figuring out, hey, I don't get any of the gifts that I was promised in any of my isekai stories. And I'm here stuck with like a god that doesn't help me and stuff like that. Like, there are so many of those shows now that almost it's kind of like, I do wonder where the trend is going to go. If it means going back to just not wholesome isekai, but like straightforward isekai of like, are we going to go back to power fantasies? Cause we've seen so many parodies. So I have no idea.
Yeah, the trend of isekai becoming self-aware has been fascinating in the anime industry because, you know, you've had so many of these twists and turns and, you know, these little niches. I mean, I think obviously, you know, speaking specifically to Suicide Squad isekai, you know, based on what we've seen with the trailers, based on what, you know, us as comic book fans know about Suicide Squad itself, they could not be more irreverent. So they're going to be kind of approaching this, you know, isekai genre. I'm sure as we're seeing them travel through this world, we're going to get a lot of fourth wall breaking, irreverent kind of twist on, you know, what the isekai story structure and tropes are. So I think it's definitely going to be that kind of tongue in cheek kind of situation, with its catch being the fact like, well, hey, these are Suicide Squad, you know, characters. This is, you know, that's an easy kind of niche in and of itself. You know, as isekai continues to grow, I mean, 5 years ago, I thought, you know, there's no way isekai can continue at, you know, its current trajectory in terms of popularity. And I mean, I lost that bet. I lost that bet real hard. It has only gotten even bigger. And so, I mean, I think, Evan, when you said that isekai is now almost as broad of a kind of genre, essentially, as romance. I mean, you look at, you know, for instance, the romance genre. I mean, you look at Nana, that could not be more different than something like Kibi ni Todoki. Like, it could not be more different from what those are, but they're both romance. You know, you look at isekai and it's starting to get that kind of flexibility, essentially, which I'm excited to see. Because, man, there's a period there, like the first, like the early, like 2010s, like late 2000s, like where all the isekai that was coming out was the exact same story. And I was so tired of it. So I really love to see the innovation that we're getting now. And to speak specifically on Suicide Squad, like they couldn't have picked, I feel, a better like comic book IP team to make that happen. Like Suicide Squad is nuts. What do you think, Evan?
Yeah, no, I totally agree, because I think that I think that like with anime fans in general, and like we cover it, we've covered it a number of times for comic book, but there's always kind of a war between, not a war, but there's a perceived war between North American comic books and manga in general. And what we've seen in recent years is that as manga and anime becomes bigger in North America, we're seeing more unification between North American comic book properties and manga in Japan and anime in Japan. And so we've seen things like Deadpool Samurai, which became a huge seller, that sees, you know, Wade Wilson teaming up with All Might from My Hero Academia. And you know, Megan, you're totally right when it comes to like, if you're gonna take any team in DC or Marvel's roster, then like Suicide Squad is the best one, because it's just this team of anti-heroes slash full-on villains who aren't afraid to just murder anyone in their path, and like dropping them into an isekai scenario just works so well. And I don't know about you guys, but I think Suicide Squad could use a win in 2024.
You just brought up my next big point, which I feel like we could throw a grenade on, because you know we are the anime focused segment of Comic Book Nation, but you know we are comicbook.com. Is this going to be the best Suicide Squad adaptation we've ever gotten to date?
Oh, ever gotten? No, because
like
I
know. Beyond the movie.
James, James Gunn's not James the Suicide Gunn, Squad.
Beyond David Ayer's. Like, I'm not talking about the comics themselves.
Yeah, I think so. Like, it has a good shot of being it, because mostly just because it looks better than all the animated works that have featured the Suicide Squad in them. And although those DC movies have like some great moments, this one still looks like it's just going to edge it out just a bit. I mean, it really does depend though on the English dub. We haven't really gotten any news on the English dub front and the English dub release, so I am curious to see how that works out. And you know, I think it has a chance of succeeding in that regard. I really do.
Now
get John Cena back as Peacemaker.
Oh my gosh, and then they can get, okay, here's the thing though. John Cena has tweeted about anime so many times. He's in love with you know, Korean culture and in Japanese, you know, pop culture. I think they have a pretty solid shot at getting John Cena for Peacemaker if they really wanted. You know, jury's out on everything else, but I guess we can find out. So now we've talked about Suicide Squad Isekai, we've talked about its adaptation. Here's the thing that I want to know, because we've talked about how broad Isekai has grown and how flexible it can be. I would love to see a trend where we get, you know, more of these licensing kind of IP collaborations where we bring pre-established characters into an Isekai world. So what other IPs do we as a collective team here need to see? Because my number one isekai is almost like a reverse isekai. I would love to see an anime that tackles the Marvel universe, but the joke is that My Hero Academia is put into the anime universe of Marvel. That's what I want.
I love that idea. I would take that one step further, and let's throw an isekai hero, right? Like base plate, you know, has a sword, is the strongest person in their world, and suddenly thrown into like the Marvel universe. I think like, yeah, that sounds fun. You know,
so like you're saying, what if we throw Yamcha from Dragon Ball into the Marvel universe?
Yeah, because that's the thing, right? Yamcha might be the weakest human in the Z Fighter roster, but the weakest human in the Z Fighter roster is the strongest human in like every other universe. So
right. Yeah, he's still gonna like. I mean, I would love to see Yamcha versus Hawkeye. Like, right?
Yeah.
Like, is it
Yamcha would destroy him?
Could you imagine? Like, how sick that would be if an anime studio was like, all right, bet, let's do it. Yamcha versus Hawkeye, Yamcha versus Black Widow. Honestly, this is it. I think my new pitch is Yamcha in any world.
Yamcha right? versus the world, right? Yeah, I dig that. Yeah, I mostly because I like the idea of throwing an anime character into like a superhero world, and I'm pretty sure that idea has been done, but like straight up, like all the anime genre tropes, but like they also get all the anime powers, right? Like I don't know, like Shadow Sight and all the stuff that you would think with anime, like Super Saiyan and all that, but. You know, have them fight Superman or something.
My other big, and I mean, obviously this will never happen. And not that any of these pitches will ever happen that I'm creating, because the licensing complications that would go behind it would be staggering. But ever since I was a child, like a small 5-6-year-old kid, I always wanted like a Pokemon Digimon crossover. I would give so much to have like a one-off special or miniseries that sucked like Pikachu or Pikachu and Ash, even though I know they're not the stars of the Pokemon anime anymore. I would kill to see them sucked into the digital world and just see the sheer confusion when these monsters start pulling out like guns and stuff.
Yeah, I was like, yo, Pikachu against War Greymon, please.
Could you
like,
imagine? Oh because in Pokemon physics and in the Pokemon universe rules, Pikachu wins. But in Digimon... Right. Not the case.
Not so much.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of those.
And Digimon can speak. Like, Digimon have, like, an actual language that they speak to people. You know, whether it's English, Japanese, whatever your dub is. Like, you know, Ash isn't talking there we go, right? What if Ash goes into this other world and then Pikachu starts talking? Like, you know, like, that's the thing.
Yeah, but it's Danny DeVito's voice, right? Yeah. Danny DeVito's voice in Pikachu in this isekai swap.
Dig it. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I know obviously all of the anime industry executives, both, you know, across the world are listening to these pitches right now. Please make them happen. I will watch. I will stand from day one. That's an easy sell for me. But yeah, I mean, just with how big isekai is coming, I think that this is not the last time we will see a big established group or, you know, an IP like Suicide Squad coming into the isekai realm and kind of playing with those kind of tropes. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we're at. Do you agree? I have to have your agreement because you're the isekai expert.
No, I totally agree. Like I think that's all it is. I'm just curious as to how it's going to play out. I'm curious if this is a one-off deal, if this is like you know, just this one season story and then it ends and then that'll be it. I'm hoping like you established earlier, Megan, like I kind of hope this is just the start of like more of a partnership between Warner Brothers Japan and WIT Studio and all this stuff, making it all happen. Like, cause I want to see more DC anime. Like we've gotten Batman Ninja and stuff in the past and we've gotten DC Comics manga. So, and then, you know, we have shows like My Adventures with Superman that show that Superman does work in an anime style. So like, I kind of want more of this. I hope we all watch it and love it and be like, yeah, give us the next one, whatever it turns out to be.
All right. And so now then, I guess after Suicide Squad isekai comes out and is a hit, I guess the ball's in Marvel's court. Give us Deadpool Samurai. Anime adaptation, you cowards.
I think that would do it.
I mean, yeah. Deadpool is the perfect. I mean, he is an anime character. Of right. all
and,
of I the mean, Marvel.
And that manga is so good. Give us that anime. Day one watch. So that is kind of our isekai explanation. Again, if you need more hard, groundbreaking coverage on all things isekai, Comic Book has it here. We have Nick Valdez here. He is our resident expert. Evan and myself are just his loyal lieges as we try to keep up with his understanding of the isekai multiverse. So that's where we're at. But, you know, unfortunately, it's that time of the show. Time to wrap things up. Thank you for listening today. If you want all of the geek news, obviously Comic Book Nation has you covered. We just covered some of the, you know, latest and breaking Star Wars stuff with the Acolyte trailer that just went live. If you want to talk about comics, we've got the pull list. If you want to talk about gaming, we have Quick Save. We got everything you need in terms of podcasts, and you can find those podcasts wherever you get your feed from. So if you want to find us here at Anime Nation to continue the conversation, you can find me on socials at Megan Peter CB. Nick, where can they find you?
At Voldizology on all the socials.
And you, Evan?
at EV Comedy on all them socials.
Awesome. Well, hit us up. Talk to us about all things Suicide Squad. Again, if you want more coverage, please head over to Comic Book Anime. We have everything you need and more to fill your little heart with all the otaku information you need. So until next week, we'll catch you later.
See you guys.